Hi, Doodle Bitches. We just posted the final designs for the t-shirts. If you're subscribed to our drip at the $12 a month tier before the end of September 2018, you will receive a free t-shirt. If you are listening in the future, we enroll new art every month. If you're not subscribed, t-shirts will be available for purchase. The t-shirts will be hand-printed in Brooklyn by Lucia.
By my blood.
Yeah, by Lucia's blood. So subscribe today at d.rip/art-and-labor. Hello and welcome to another edition of Art and Labor. We're doing another reading series for y'all. This week we're reading 9.5 Theses on Art in Class by Ben Davis. Oh, right. I'm OK Fox.
And I'm Lucia Love.
Welcome to Art and Labor. Yeah, we are a podcast dedicated to the ongoing struggle to survive as an art and or cultural worker. And we're gonna
welcome all doodle bitches to take in
this
quintessential manifesto.
Yeah, folks might be familiar with Ben Davis already. He's very
he's been around.
Guy's been around. He's on a panel that my gallery mate Sessa put together. Shout out to Sessa England.
What's up, Sessa?
Then I'm going to find I'm pretty sure it was recorded. And I'm going to put that in the show notes.
Oh, yeah. And check out Sessa's paintings.
Yeah. Sessa rules. And that discussion was about unpaid internships and fair compensation. I believe that's what it was about, but it was literally in like 2014 or some shit like that.
You know? Yeah. So. We get to have these conversations in perpetuity. It's so exciting to be a lefty.
I mean, fuck, this thesis was written in like 2011 or something.
Yeah.
The book came out in 2013, but thesis has been around for a while, and if folks had just fucking rallied around it,
just listened to it a bit. You know who has signed on? Boots Riley.
Boots Riley. Our favorite guy, Boots Riley. The best movie, the only movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maker of the only movie.
Only. Art and Labor, the only podcast, recommends the only movie. Sorry to bother you.
Hey, you know, communists, they're all about getting their party line correct. There's only one of everything. 9.5 is mentioned in this interview on the Build series. You can just do Build series, Boots Riley.
We'll put in the show notes.
Oh, yeah. Just come to us.
Put in the show notes.
Just come to us. We'll give you all the information.
Yeah.
The only information.
The only blog on the internet. Artandlaborpodcast.com.
Where can I find out about toothpaste? You can't.
Nope. We're Wikipedia now.
Oh god, I just thought about that Wikipedia thing where it's like, oh hey, we're the Tate and now we're just gonna rely completely on Wikipedia for doing all of this free labor together all these biographies.
Okay, making a note here, I really want to do an episode, shout out my friend Maddie Varner, who is a researcher who, yeah, we were talking about that, and we were talking about how there's just this like group of like Norwegian open source internet people that just do all of this free labor for all of the major conglomerate websites. And
why are they Norwegian?
It's like one of them's definitely Norwegian.
That's the major sticking point for me. Not like, why is there all this free labor going on?
There's probably some folks in Iceland too. There's a lot of like internet folks.
Oh, it's because they're doing so well with their socialized government that they have the free time to do all of this labor for everyone else.
They believe in a socialized internet so hard that they're like, yeah, we'll do this. And then and Maddie was telling me that one of the guys was just like, yeah, I can't eat. I don't have enough food. I can't keep doing this free labor. And I'm not going to do it anymore. I'm tapping out, y'all.
They're like, what about one more?
And it's like literally like Facebook. Like they'll do all this like free open source like stuff that makes Facebook run and all. I don't know. It's like
we should
evil
yeah
shit.
We should definitely do an episode on all of that, like the wiki-thons or whatever too, like all the people yeah. who have to get together to actually say, like, I mean, even though it is just yeah. expressly for Wikipedia, there are all of these weird injustices going on where it's like, who gets added, who gets omitted?
Yeah, and so then groups of women and queer people have to like get together like every month in every city around the world and be yeah. like, yeah, we're all getting together to do all this free articles for Wikipedia mm-hmm. because like there's such a male bias to being able to like access and understand how to contribute
look,
to this.
Look, it's just that like Dwarf Fortress is actually a really important
needs
aspect of our not history.
Just, not just one article, multiple, please.
Yeah, look, I need it hyperlinked to every guy who's ever sat in a basement and coded a thing.
I mean, yeah, and we can get, oh yeah, fuck, I'm just going to go on a tear because like, I'm really into that topic.
No, we'll save it though. We got to make an episode out of that.
Making a note here, we want to do more like technology episodes because yeah. that's a big thing. I'm going to SPX this weekend.
Whoop whoop.
Going straight into that hurricane.
Mm-hmm. That's so exciting.
Just gonna go say hi.
Yeah. Are you gonna greet show it. Up at the court dates?
Hello. Oh,
do you have a spot on your jury?
Oh my god.
Because I hate rapists.
Oh fuck. I mean, honestly, yeah. I mean, I would. It's a lot of my friends who are like being fucked with by this. There's this evil rapist guy that folks don't know who's suing his accusers.
Yeah.
And
such a cool dude.
There's this comic book legal defense fund that refuses to stand by the people, like refuses to help the victims, like with their court fees or anything, because they're too busy like backrolling the court fees for like reactionary racists. Who,
yeah, well, the legal defense fund people, or who is it that gave $200,000, like.
So, SPX is a small press expo in Bethesda, and part. Like they're like fostered this community that like funds a lot of the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, but right. the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund has become this reactionary shithole.
Oh.
So instead of giving as much to Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, the SPX is now gonna help the victims of this rapist guy with right. their just yeah, help so them directly instead of going through the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. Yeah. Comic Book Legal Defense Fund is like, oh well, it maybe if it had been in the form of a comic,
oh my god,
then we could defend them. But you know, it's because they're the guy's suing them for defamation for like posting on their like private.
Well, yeah, because it stressed Facebooks him out a lot that all these people felt raped.
Yeah, you know, won't somebody.
It's great. That's great.
Fucking awful. Yeah. But yeah, and then the other scandal models. Is that Amazon
is funding.
It's like
an
now
independent publishing.
They announced like 2 or 3 days before the fair that they were doing this partnership with Comixology, which is owned by Amazon.
Yeah.
And Amazon is like worming its way into like these small publishers to try to like work with them directly. And it's just like, you're not a small publisher anymore if you work with Amazon.
Yeah.
Like the whole point of having a small independent press community is against Amazon. Like,
well,
right?
At a certain point, it's going to be really hard for everyone not to interface with Amazon after
right.
they own right. every molecule right. in the fucking universe.
Right.
So,
right.
like, right. I love right. the idea that we're all, like I don't know, I've had that argument with everyone where they're like, you guys just don't buy anything off of Amazon. And it's like,
good luck.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I'm sure that you and I are going to single-handedly take down this behemoth just by making sure that we buy our used books from, like, I don't know, Strand instead.
I mean,
like,
yeah, it's getting to the point where we just need to nationalize Amazon.
Oh, totally.
And fold it into the postal service.
But at the end of the day, yeah, it's they have everything and they won and they own our souls and, like, I hate it too.
Yeah, it fucking is awful. I agree. It's kind of like, it's kind of such a fucking behemoth that like there, we really would need a much wider coalition to ever take it down. But if we're calling ourselves a small press community, we should not be working with Amazon.
That's absolutely true. Like, and at a certain point, it's like what happened with Spring Break Fair. I used to do Spring Break when it was still in the old school
building. The schoolhouse.
Yeah, I did. So I did my game show, Soft Power, in the cafeteria of the old schoolhouse. Yes. And that was crazy because also when they were in the post office, I was like there spending all my time like cleaning up the area.
It's full of asbestos. The post office is full of asbestos.
Especially that. I put a bandana over my fucking face and removed tons of asbestos tiles with my fucking hands with my friends. And so that they could make a show happen and we could all do this thing together.
Yeah.
And it's something like, you know, at a certain point the people involved don't necessarily, I don't blame anybody, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's like good for them. They made an event and it's glorious and it's large and it's
growing.
It's emerging. It's as its own entity.
Yeah.
But you know, they did the thing where it was like the first few years people, they're ragtag.
And then they get
Jerry Saltz in there as an artist.
This gets to a point that Ben Davis makes about DIY scenes.
Oh yeah, I mean you could stay DIY, I guess.
It's I mean he argues that you can't.
Yeah,
and that
no, it never stays that way.
It's never going to stay that
way. It never does. There's
and he
always
cites somebody else who talks about that, but that's not the focus on this episode.
Yeah.
But that's in this book if people are.
Yeah, but just from experience, when you want a thing to grow and you're looking for, like, you know, the investment, the capital investment that enables your small business to thrive.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to end up reaching a point where, like, large corporations are, like, a necessary partnership if you want a large-scale experience. And it's just, like, how do we, unless we figure out a way to do something like campaign massively for something that, you know, we'd need like definitely more time to gain the same amount of resources and like it's possible to fail.
I mean, well, the thing is, like, there are fests that do things through institutions. There are fests that do things through libraries and things through schools, and that's the model.
But the thing about Amazon is that, like, you can just upload your publication and you can, like, set the price at 99 cents and then share it with all your friends, and it's super easy. So then it maintains that sort of, like, community thing, because even though we all exist under this behemoth, like, you still have this weirdly, like, easy access visibility.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, but then there's also, like Comicsology was independent. And they should have never sold themselves to Amazon to begin with. But it's like, you know, how Random House and Penguin are the same entity now. There's no, it's all consolidating.
It's great.
That's what capitalism does, guys.
Yeah.
If you learn more about Marx, he predicted all of this that's happening. And this is the way it works, is that there's nowhere to go but continue to consolidate, continue to make.
We're entering into the supernova of monoculture.
Yeah, so I mean, I would argue that it's fine to work with Amazon, but I don't think you should call yourself a small press expo.
No, definitely not.
Yeah.
Like, that's just...
Call yourself something else.
But then that's the whole thing, too, is, like, under capitalism, we've gotten used to the advertising of things being about a feeling. Like, it feels independent, and I love that. Like Sundance, you know, the same thing. It's like, Sundance is fucking huge.
Yeah.
They have their own channels. They have, like, and everyone is still like, no, that's indie. And indie doesn't mean anything anymore.
No.
Indie just means you're going to see something that isn't Marvel.
Well, you're going to see something that's done by the increasingly less independent. They're like the independent imprint of a large corporation.
Yeah.
So they're all still owned by...
It's like the trial ground.
Fox or Sony or whatever. There's not a lot of studios that are truly independent anymore. but they are like an imprint of a bigger, and that's like, that's what's happened in book publishing too, is that, you know, Random House just bought all of the other imprints.
What do you think about, like, if there was, it's like, okay, I'm Small Press Expo and I take money from Amazon and then I put up my show and right in the doorway is like, fuck Amazon so hard in the ass that it bleeds out and becomes a desiccated corpse. And that's just a big banner in the front. And then underneath it says paid for by Amazon. Is that cool? I don't know. I'm just trying, you know, I don't want to feel so bleak. I just want to have fun with it. But it just feels so unavoidable.
The way out is, right, there's another one called Gumroad, and Gumroad is a venture capital backed one that's similar to Comicology. And so the thing with that is that it's independent right now, but it's just until it's bought out.
Yeah.
And then isn't anymore. But it's like, if Gumroad instead decided to be like, you know what? Fuck it. We're a worker-owned co-op. We're not looking to grow. We're fine the size we are. We're manageable. And we're just going to... like, sort of like Bandcamp.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, Joey, is that right about Bandcamp? You don't know?
Oh.
Joey doesn't know. But I'm pretty sure Bandcamp is just a small company. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, this is fine.
Oh, that's chill.
And I'm chill with that.
Yeah. That is cool. There's hope.
I don't know.
Be like Bandcamp.
But I don't know. I think Bandcamp probably has its own set of problems, but it could probably be more worker owned, probably. I don't know the specifics, but
yeah.
It's not impossible to just exist as a company. It's just the way a lot of companies are structured is for their shareholders instead of for their workers, right? And so mm-hmm. then that's the incentive for them to just keep growing and growing and growing. And
well, yeah, which is completely bizarre, though. Yeah. There's never everything is always like tautological with capitalism.
Yeah.
It's always like, oh, well, we have to grow because we have to grow. And it always works this way because it always works this way. And
yeah,
it's true. It is true. Like DIY stuff, if it's going to survive, usually ends up becoming like corporatized or becomes like sort of
kicked out by Vice, and then Vice replaces it with like
the same thing,
but Vice, yeah.
And like, there isn't actually any logical reason for why that has to happen. It just always does. And I've just taken it as a given, like, okay, all this stuff exists and I know that, and it's emotionally painful to experience a world where this is true. And that does lead back into the nihilism, but
that's capitalist realism.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
It's not like it has to be that way. It's not like it is actually true. It's just like likely.
Right. Yeah, it's just like,
probably.
Don't get your hopes up.
Yeah.
Everyone dies.
Well, we went off the rails.
Yeah, Ben Davis, he's great.
Yeah, he does talk about DIY in this book. And I should have looked it up while we were talking, but I didn't.
No, that's cool.
But read the book. Read the whole book. It's good. We're just going to focus on the theses because there's plenty of stuff just within that.
Yeah, let's get into it.
But yeah, I mean, we have an interest in Trotsky. I wouldn't say that we're Trots necessarily, but
I don't know enough about
it. Yeah,
what he actually was about.
But Ben Davis argues that,
he was an angel baby.
Given, this is in the intro of the book, given how widespread the interest in alternative currents of Marxist thought has been both in the academy and in the more high-minded art magazines, from the Frankfurt School to Situationism to various forms of post-Althusserian philosophy, it is telling that the Trotskyist tradition, which... with its activist emphasis, is so little discussed. This absence is particularly inexcusable given that Trotsky had a great deal to say about artistic matters in ways that refute many of the persistent stereotypes about the Marxist approach to art. Mm. And that was our argument, too.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Those stereotypes run deep, too. That just made me, it made me think of something a professor was saying about, like, as I was reading, basically everything Marx adjacent in the art world, which is a ton of the stuff that gets taught, like all of the semiologists or semioticians, like all of these people, like Frederick Jameson, especially, is like, oh, wow, this guy's like so right on. And then a professor just goes like, well, listen, kid, like we read this stuff, but we don't actually talk about it because, you know, Marxists are trying to get you to stop making art. And if you want to make stuff, you can't be a Marxist.
Yeah, that's bullshit.
Yeah, it's great, though. That's a direct teaching from art school.
Yeah, and that's a huge problem. Art schools are a huge problem, and we're definitely going to dedicate many episodes to art schools. Sky's the limit with that shit. We got a lot to say.
Talk about them all day.
Yep. Yeah, and the intro is good. He just talks about how people like are dismissive of like art as a potential to do anything, and it makes sense in certain ways, but like you know, why not try? So should we get into it? Should we start?
Let's get right into it. We'll do page for page.
I'll start. I mean, yeah. All
cool.
Right. Okay, so 9.5 Theses on Art and Class by Ben Davis. Should I do all the numbers?
Yes.
Okay. 1.0, class is an issue of fundamental importance for art. 1.1, inasmuch as art is a part of and not independent of society, and society is marked by class divisions, these will also affect the functioning and character of the sphere of visual arts. 1.2, since different classes have different interests and art is affected by these different interests, art has different values depending on from which class standpoint it is approached. 1.3. Understanding art means understanding class relations outside of the sphere of visual arts and how they affect that sphere, as well as understanding class relations within the sphere of visual arts itself. 1.4. In general, the idea of the art world, in quotes, serves as a way to deflect consideration of both these sets of relations. 1.5, the notion of an art world implies a sphere that is separate or set aside from the issues of the non-art world, also separates it from class issues outside that sphere. 1.6, the notion of an art world also visualizes the sphere of visual arts not as a set of conflicting interests, but as a confluence of professionals with a common interest, art, parentheses, and so denies class relations within that sphere. 1.7, anxiety about class in the sphere of visual arts manifests in critiques of the art market, in quotes. However, a critique of the art market is not the same as a critique of class in the sphere of the visual arts. Class is an issue that is more fundamental and determinant than the market. 1.8. The art market is approached differently by different classes. Discussing the art market in the absence of understanding class interests serves to obscure the actual forces determining art's situation. 1.9. Since class is a fundamental issue for art, art can't have any clear idea of its own nature unless it has a clear idea of the interests of different classes.
That's far out. It's like the dream of the art world being like, you can come from anywhere and talk about anything. And like, art is just this different sphere where, you know, you leave your material sort of existence at the door and you get to remake yourself as a Warhol factory superstar.
Right. Yeah. Like art defies class or whatever, or art. Yeah. He'll talk about it more, but like art is an aspirational identity or whatever. That doesn't really make sense.
Okay. 2.0. Today, the ruling class, which is capitalist, dominates the sphere of the visual arts. 2.1. It is part of the definition of a ruling class that it controls the material resources of society. 2.2. The ruling ideologies of society, which serve to reproduce this material situation, also represent the interests of the ruling class. 2.3. The dominant values given to art, therefore, will be ones that serve the interests of the current ruling class. 2.4. Concretely, within the sphere of the contemporary visual arts, the agents whose interests determine the dominant values of art are large corporations, including auction houses and corporate collectors, art investors, private collectors, and patrons, and trustees, and administrators of large cultural institutions and universities. 2.5. One role for art, therefore, is as a luxury good, whose superior craftsmanship or intellectual prestige indicate superior social status. 2.6. Another role for art is to serve as financial instrument or tradable repository of value. 2.7. Another role for art is as a sign of, quote-unquote, giving back to the community to whitewash ill-gotten gains. Yeah.
The shed.
Fucking shed. Fuck you, shed. Okay. 2.8. Another role for art is as a symbolic escape valve for radical impulses, to serve as a place to isolate and contain social energy that runs counter to the dominant ideology. 2.9. A final role for art is a self-replication of ruling class ideology about art itself. The dominant values given to art serve not only to enact ruling class values directly, but also to subjugate within the sphere of the arts other possible values of art. 3.0. Through ruling class ideology is ultimately... Though ruling class ideology is ultimately dominant within the sphere of the arts, the predominant character of this sphere is middle class. 3.1. Middle class in this context does not indicate income level. It indicates a mode of relating to labor and the means of production. Quote unquote middle class here indicates having an individual self-directed relationship to production rather than administering and maximizing the profit produced by the labor of others, a capitalist class, or selling one's labor power, working class. And 3.2, the position of the professional artist is characteristically middle class in relation to labor. The dream of being an artist is the dream of making a living off the products of one's own material or one's own mental or physical labor while being fully able to control and identify with that labor.
Yeah. I mean, there's something about people wanting to go to art school because they just know that they're not going to fit into a normal path.
Yeah.
Right? And they just, like, aren't good at other things in school and just want to, you know, be their own person and not have to work for someone else.
Yeah.
And that's why a lot of artists have an anarchist bent.
And that makes it very difficult for them to organize.
Yeah.
like fuck this.
We'll get to it. Okay, so 3.3. A distinctive characteristic of the visual arts sphere, therefore, is that it is a sphere in which ruling class ideology dominates and yet is allowed to have an unusually middle class character. Parenthetical. In fact, it is by definition middle class. The art world is defined as the sphere that trades in individual products of creativity rather than mass produced creativity. 3.4. In part, the middle class character of the visual arts relates to 2.5 to 2.8 above. From a ruling class perspective, it is beneficial to promote the example of middle class creative labor for a variety of reasons. 3.5. Nevertheless, the middle class perspective on the value and role of art is not identical to the ruling class one. Artists have their own way of relating to their labor and consequently their own value for art. 3.6. The middle class value of art is double-sided. On the one hand, art is identified as a profession, as a desirable means of support. 3.7. On the other hand, art is identified as self-expression, as manifestation of the creative individuality, whether that is expressed through a specific style of craftsmanship or an original intellectual program. Art theory debates about the importance of the hand of the artist or studio versus post-studio production. Displace this more fundamental and structural sense in which the sphere of visual arts preserves individuality. 3.8. Two permanent contradictions, therefore, dominate the sphere of visual arts. The first contradiction is between the fact that visual arts are dominated by ruling class values but defined by their middle class character. 3.9. The second contradiction is internal to the middle class definition of art itself, which is split between the notions of art as profession and as vocation, and therefore comes into contradiction with itself at every moment, where what an artist wants to express runs into opposition with the demands of making a living. In a situation where a minority dominates most of society's resources, this is often. 4.0. The sphere of the visual arts has weak relations with the working class. 4.1. The working class here is defined as consisting of those laborers who are compelled to sell their labor power as a commodity to make a living and therefore have no individual stake in their labor. 4.2. There are many links to the working class in the visual arts. Gallery workers, anonymous fabricators of artistic components, non-professional museum workers, and so on. Most artists themselves, employed outside of the art world, the dream of having fully realized middle-class status remains aspirational for most people who identify as artists. 4.3. Still, the form of labor at the heart of the sphere of the visual arts, the production of art workers, remains middle class, far more so than other so-called creative industries. You know, he's saying art world as like a separate thing from other creative industries.
Yeah.
Which is hard to define, art world.
Yeah, it's one of those things, you know, it when you see it, that is an art and or cultural worker. I just was thinking about like that alienation of the people who are maybe like art handlers that don't even really interface with the artists that make the stuff. And
one of Heath Distrail's video pieces is about security guards.
Oh, great.
At museums.
Yeah. A lot of them are like getting art history degrees and stuff. And one of those, that's the kind of position that you can hang out in the museum.
Yeah.
You can receive its knowledge while getting paid, and they offer you the chance to get a master's in some positions too.
Yeah. That
there's like, I think there's like a thing at the Met where you can take classes at like Columbia or some, there's like some crazy, it might be done or I might be getting it wrong, but I think there's some program like that.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, it's neato. Mm-hmm. 4.4. One consequence of this predominantly middle class character is the visual arts approach to dealing with the social and economic contradictions that it faces. And individualized relation to labor means that middle-class agents tend to conceive of their ability to achieve their political objectives in individualistic terms. with their social power deriving from intellectual capacity, personality, or rhetoric. It is this reality that is behind the displacement of the discussion about art's contradictions on to considerations of the market, a construct in which free individuals enter into economic relations with one another rather than considerations of quote-unquote class, a concept that implies fundamental opposing interests that go beyond the individual. 4.5. On the other hand, because being a member of the working class involves being treated as an abstract, interchangeable source of labor, the working class's ability to achieve its objectives depends much more on its ability to organize collectively. This is a form of resistance that is difficult to achieve within the sphere of the arts. All talk of an artist strike remains satirical outside a situation like that of the 1930s government art support in the United States, where artists are employed as a block. 4.6, because the ruling structure of society is capitalist, that is, the exploitation of wage labor to maximize profit, the working class position is actually closer to the core of society's functioning than that of the middle class. Middle class workers, by the very nature of their semi-independence, have only the ability to shut down their own production, whereas an organized working class can directly affect the ruling class's interests. 4.7. The specific nature of the working class suggests its own relation to the concept of art, distinct from either capitalist or middle class notions. 4.8. On the other hand, one working class value of art is determined by the reality of creative industries, in which creative laborers are employed who have a working class relation to the products of their expression. That is, they produce creative products not as an expression of their individuality, but simply as a task. Viewed from this angle, art is demystified. It is not a uniquely exalted form of expression, but simply one more human process that is the subject of labor. 4.9. On the other hand, inasmuch as working class labor is controlled from above, the ideal of art might also represent a form of labor that is opposed to the demands of work as freely determined expression, whether private or political. Viewed from this angle, art is deprofessionalized and in this sense is actually more free than the middle class ideal of personal expression as career.
5.0. The idea of art has a basic and general human sense on which no specific profession or class has a monopoly. 5.1. Art, conceived of as creative expression in general, can be seen as representing a function as basic as exercise or dialogue and need only slightly less fundamental than eating or sex. In parentheses, slightly less fundamental because of the question of creative expression comes after simple survival. You must first secure food before you can think of cuisine. 5.2. Conceived of in this way, every human activity has an artistic component, an aspect under which it can be viewed as creative. 5.3. However, in any given historical situation, some forms of creative labor are valued over others. Some types of labor are considered more exalted, others less so. 5.4. Which of the various forms of labor are considered truly artistic on their own, governed by the present ruling class, brackets 2.2, which presides over the dominant relations of production and by this means has influence over both the character of non-artistic labor and the value of art, as well as the intersections between them. Ooh, what a question. Maybe someone should make a podcast about that. 5.5. However, the general artistic impulse does not simply vanish in the face of its specific historical determinations, insofar as a basic sense of art as creative expression exists. Humans also have a certain day-to-day creative investment in their labor, since all labor is the creative transformation of matter or life. 5.6. On the other hand, insofar as the general impulse towards creativity is cramped and thwarted by the demands of specific historical setup, there exists the impulse to escape these and express freely outside of them. 5.7. Because art, in the sense of general creative expression, is a basic impulse, no class has monopoly on it. However, the organic worldviews of different classes can be closer or farther from expressing the possibilities of general realization. 5.8. Both ruling and middle class worldviews preclude the idea of art as a general human expression. The ruling class, because it defines the value of art according to the interests of a narrow minority. The middle class, because interest involves defining creativity as professional self-expression, which therefore restricts it to its creative experts. 5.9. The working class perspective, then, can be seen to reflect the most organic contemporary conception of generalized creative expression, even if circumstances don't always allow this conception to be developed or expressed. Art, in this light, is at once a subject of labor, just like any other. 4.8. And opposed to the alienation of the present-day labor process, brackets 4.9, it is therefore implicitly free of any professional determination and common to all. Although this aspect in the present ideological setup is often channeled into middle-class creative aspirations, which can itself be seen as one of the uses of the quote-unquote art world for the ruling class. Brackets 2.8 and following from this, 2.9. That's a long one. But see our episode on defense of poor image.
Yeah.
And on an imperfect cinema.
Or just most of our episodes. I feel like this is really knocking out our whole episode catalog with just a few bullet points. Like, hey, so there's this whole thing about like individualist pursuits just kind of not really having anything to do with these collective activities for betterment of life. Aspiration. 6.0. Because art is part of society, see 1.1, and because no single profession has a monopoly on creative expression, see 5.0, the values given to art within the sphere of the contemporary visual arts will also be determined in relation to how creativity is manifested in other spheres of contemporary society. 6.1. Art, in common parlance, has a double meaning. It designates creative activity in general and represents work that circulates within specific tradition and set of institutions of the visual arts. Thus, something can be art, that is, creative, but not be, capital A, art, that is, not fit within the visual arts sphere. Or something can be, capital A, art, that is, can be easily classifiable within the sphere of the visual arts, but not be art, that is, not be particularly creative. 6.2. Contemporary visual art, therefore, has a paradoxical character. It is a specific creative discipline that arrogates to itself the status of representing creativity in general. When someone says that he is professionally an artist, he is often both trying to indicate that he works within a certain set of traditions and institutions, and implying that his labor has a certain especially creative character. 6.3. This overlap stems from the middle-class character of the contemporary visual arts, the middle-class perspective being precisely the one in which one's investment in creativity in general overlaps with one's professional identity. 6.4. However, equally paradoxically, contemporary visual art, as opposed to every other type of creative labor, music, film, acting, graphic design, cake decoration, has no specific medium, that is, no specific form of labor attached to it. When you say that you are an artist, you imply nothing about the specific character of your work. Contemporary art in this way is a kind of reductio ad absurdum of the idea of creative individuality.
Big words.
Yeah, it's like kind of like I know a lot of Latin. Oh, God. I'll be at the bar all night. 6.5. This lack of definition is in inverse proportion to the extreme hyper-definition of labor in a variety of other contemporary creative industries. Video games, film, and television all involve creative labor employed on a massive, impersonal, and very specialized level.
Yeah. Where was Ben Davis during this whole gay cake Supreme Court case?
I know. We need some art legislation here.
Oh, also, there's a new delete your account about the game workers trying to unionize.
I saw that.
Yeah, I haven't listened to it yet, but
it's exciting.
Game workers of the world, unite.
Yes, and make more female characters that I can relate to.
I mean,
please, though, actually.
Yeah, that's a huge...
I don't want to play Witcher. I don't fucking want to play. I don't want to be Witcher.
I play Bayonetta. I've never played Bayonetta.
Oh, I don't know.
You want to play it?
Yeah.
That could be totally fun. I've never played it before. Oh, it's on the Switch now.
Yeah, let's do it.
6.6. Because capitalist relations of production are the dominant relations of production, and these other creative industries are more fully organized around capitalist production, they also have a more central importance to contemporary society. They are at the center of innovation, investment, and public attention on a level with which the sphere of visual arts cannot by itself compete. 6.7. Nevertheless, while it cannot compete with these industries, contemporary art takes on its significance in relation to them. While they represent creativity tailored to capitalist specifications, the sphere of the visual arts generates its cachet precisely as the sphere in which individual quality and intellectual independence are preserved, in which the same way that politicians avoid talking about the working class by talking endlessly about the importance of the middle class, an exaggerated intellectual significance is given to the importance of the middle class art world to escape the reality of the extent to which contemporary creativity is dominated by impersonal industry. 6.8. The visual arts in relation to visual culture or culture in general thus finds itself with few stable paths. It can attempt to merge with these other fully capitalist creative spheres, but only as junior partner. It does so at the cost of giving up its reason for existing as a separate privileged sphere at all, which is that it represents autonomous creativity not directed by the pure profit motive. 6.9, nice. On the other hand...
nice.
Fucking dumbass. Yeah. Sorry. 6.9. On the other hand, contemporary visual art also faces a dilemma. If it does not engage with other more dominant creative industries, in that case, its audience becomes narrowed only to the very rich and those who have the privilege to have been educated in its traditions, which makes clear the narrow horizon and, consequently, lack of freedom within which this supposedly free form of expression maneuvers. 7.0. Art criticism, to be relevant, should be based on analysis of the actual situation of art and the different ways, different values at play, which are related to different classes, thus simply draws the conclusion for criticism of 1.9. 7.1, art criticism is itself a middle-class discipline based on norms of individual intellectual expression, since relevant art criticism involves analysis of the actual class situation of art. It involves transcending purely subjective individual professional opinion. 7.2. However, transcending purely subjective criticism does not imply the false objectivity of art criticism that imposes a philosophical or political program on art. This sort of scholastic criticism equally implies a middle-class perspective, often based on the academy, insofar as it advances a purely abstract intellectual program and fails to address the actual social situation of the visual arts. For example, simply insisting that art be political without seriously analyzing for whom or what ends political art is directed actually reinforces the framework of individualistic professional expression.
7.3. Acknowledging that contemporary art has a middle-class character is not the same as denouncing the sphere of the visual arts for petit bourgeois decadence. One must judge art in terms of the contradictory values given to it by competing class interests, which in part means recognizing the sphere of the visual arts as a significant repository of legitimate hopes for self-expression. Insofar as contemporary society thwarts or distorts self-expression, the urge to follow one's own creative path can itself be a political impulse. Hell yeah. 7.4. However, the middle-class character of the visual arts does mean that this sphere is faced with certain dilemmas. See, for instance, 3.8, 3.9, 6.8, and 6.9.
Nice.
That's too bad. That cannot be resolved within that sphere itself as it is currently constituted. See 4.5 and 4.6. A realistic and effective critical worldview starts from this standpoint. 7.5. Artistic quality is not something that can be judged independently of questions of class, and the present balance of class forces, because different classes have different values for art that imply different criteria of success. See Theses 2, 3, and 4. 7.6. Insofar as different class influences are at play in the visual arts, an artwork is never reducible to one meaning. Quite often, artworks amount to compromises, attempting to resolve a number of different influences into a single artistic formula. A work might, for instance, be executed in a style that is attractive to art collectors, but also attempt to put an original professional signature on it, and at the same time express some type of sincere political solidarity. 7.7. To state that every contemporary work of art will, by definition, be a product of contemporary society and thus bear the marks of the contradictions of its actual material situation does not imply that all art can be reduced to the same problem. Effective art criticism implies having a dynamic analysis of how specific aesthetic values are related to the present balance of forces and making a judgment with regard to what factors are playing the most crucial role at any given moment with any given work. 7.8. There is an aspect of taste that implies nothing political and is simply the product of personal experience and history. That is, there is no contradiction if two people have the same political analysis of the world but different aesthetic preferences. But such judgments are of secondary importance here. I liked this is a legitimate opinion, but it is not criticism that is serious, interesting, or useful.
Hell yeah, dude.
Yeah. Go ahead and like what you want.
That's what my really good professor used to yell at us if we ever said that in a critique.
Oh, nice.
You can't just say, I like this. It's bullshit. It's stupid.
Yeah. Shut up. I don't care what you like.
He's a funny guy.
That's hardcore.
Yeah. 7.9. Art criticism is not political because it imposes a political framework on a contemporary art, but because accurately representing art's real situation implies understanding the dilemmas of middle-class creative labor in a capitalist world. See 3.8 and 3.9. And therefore implies a political critique of that setup. 8.0. The relative strength of different values of art within the sphere of visual arts is the product of specific balance of class forces. There can be more or less progressive situations for contemporary art, even in a capitalist world, depending on the strengths of these different classes and what demands they are able to advance. 8.1. The demands to be effective should be organically connected to actual struggle. They cannot be an abstract program cooked up by a few and imposed in a program for the art without any connection to actual movements within that sphere. Nevertheless, some provisional suggestions can be advanced following flowing from the analysis in the preceding thesis. All of the following ideas have some support and expression currently. The trick is to extend such initiatives to the point where they become more than purely symbolic gestures, thus fitting the criteria of 2.8, and are strong enough to shift the dominant values of art. Yo, snaps yeah. that. 8.2. Above all, private capital has disproportionate influence on the visual arts. Therefore, increased public funding for arts institutions can have the effect of reducing the intensity of contradiction facing the visual arts. 8.3. Such institutions should be democratically accountable to the communities they serve, so as not to replicate the effect of top-down influence on art through bureaucratic directives. Currently existing institutions should be made more democratic. Institutions should pay the artists they exhibit rather than exploiting the artists' professional aspirations by extracting free work from them.
Imagine
that. Imagine if people took that in 2011 cool. and just like ran with it. And
then people were getting paid and today.
Yeah.
What if people were getting paid today?
Just fun little things to think about.
yeah. Cute stuff.
8.4. Art's current definition as a luxury good or as the primary concern of a specific professional sphere limits its full significance. Programs should be launched and supported that offer venues for artistic activity that are not necessarily aimed at the rich or already initiated. Air horn. 8.5. Research and critical projects should be funded that investigate, explore, and support on a large scale alternative definitions and sites for creativity. Art is not always produced by or for the market, a fact that should be a fundamental starting point. This involves transcending the critique of the art market paradigm, which assumes that the problem is simply making the market more democratic. All right.
Okay. 8.6. Contemporary art suffers from a narrow audience. Access to art education is largely and increasingly determined by income level and privilege. Art education should be defended and made universal. This point itself involves a critique of the notion that art is a luxury. 8.7. There is no reason why the immense quantity of artistic talent that currently exists, unable to find purchase within the cramped confines of the professional art world, could not be put to work generalizing art education, thereby providing itself with a future audience. 8.8. This kind of common identity could form the basis for organizing artists as something more than individual agents, each working on a separate project. It therefore would also lay the foundation for a more organically political character for contemporary art. 8.9. Creative expression needs to be redefined. It should not be thought of as a privilege, but as a basic human need. Because creative expression is a basic human need, it should be treated as a right to which everyone is entitled. 9.0. The sphere of the visual arts is an important symbolic site of struggle. However, because of its middle-class character, it has relatively little effective social power. See 4.5. 9.1. Achieving the reform objectives of Thesis 8, therefore, entails that the sphere of the visual arts transcend itself and purely art world concerns. Such reforms will be best achieved by linking up with struggles outside of the sphere of the visual arts. For instance, linking the fight for art to the fight for education. 8.6. 9.2. Whatever these specific struggles are, it is an organized working class that is best placed to challenge dominant ruling class relations, see 4.6, which is the precondition for challenging dominant ruling class values of art and improving the situation of art. 9.3. The dual working class values for art, see 4.8 and 4.9, is the subject of normal labor and as free expression and surplus of the demands of day-to-day labor seem to imply a contradiction. This contradiction, however, is based on the current economic setup in which a ruling class minority dictates the conditions of work. 9.4. Such a contradiction is transcended in a situation in which laborers democratically control the character of their own labor and consequently the terms of their own leisure. It is only such a state of affairs that offers the potential for the maximum flourishing of human artistic potential. Let's just read the last one.
You want to read 9.5?
I'm just going to read it.
You read 9.5.
I'm just going to do it. Yeah! 9.5. It is towards such a perspective, which involves changing the material basis of society, that those who care about art should turn. In the absence of such a perspective in the sphere of the visual arts, its representatives will turn in circles, responding to the same problems without ever arriving at a solution. Art's situation will remain fraught and contradictory. Its full potential will remain unrealized.
Bitch, that's the conclusion to make from this, is the last point there. Like, mm-hmm. If we're not fighting for better material conditions for everybody, then we're sealing our own fate, then we're doomed. We're fricked.
Yeah, and there's just not really much of a use in saving your own skin when we're all going down on the same ball of flames.
And the whole point about circling the same problems over and over again, that's the issue with sexual harassment. That's the issue with, like, racism within the arts and decolonization and all these things. We're just going to keep having these problems if we don't address the material conditions of everybody.
Absolutely. And it's in comparison to, like, what's happening with the small press lawsuit. Mm-hmm. What's going on with, like, the whole Chuck Close thing? You know, or the Knight Landsman thing.
Yeah.
It's like we still have this area of protection, non-interference around the sort of hoity-toity sector of the art world that just really, really wants to protect wealth.
Oh, yeah. I don't understand how anybody cannot see what's happening with Me Too across fields and not realize.
And because the McDonald's workers thing was incredible. Like, there's a whole Me Too thing cropping up right now with all of the workers of McDonald's going on strike to mm-hmm. fight against sexual harassment together.
Yes.
And for some reason in the art world, we can't get it
in the art and in media and Hollywood and all these fields. It has become so fucking clear that if you're wealthy enough, you're fine. You get away with it. Nothing bad actually happens to you. That's like so obviously the takeaway if you really look at Me Too.
What's the price to pay for individualism? Because what the art world and these like theses are saying is that there's a place for people to feel their political stance is heard. Like I'm being myself and I'm expressing myself, and that's inherently political and that's true, but it's political without agency. Right. And then you get to fund your own lawsuits, and it never becomes a part of anyone else's problem, or you can't really stand in solidarity if you're just up on the bench yourself.
Right. And you can write an open letter, but if that's all you have, it's not going to get you anywhere. If you can't.
Yeah. You can add your name to a petition, but who's looking at it? Where is it going? And how many people? Because even like if the whole downtown scene was like, yeah, I'm going to sign on to a cause.
Well, that's the thing, you know, after the shit with Artform, there's a huge open letter called Not Surprised.
Yeah, I know. And, I know some of the people who were actually I got that when it was going around in an email form before the Instagram.
Well, you know what? I was one of the first people drafting that.
Yeah.
I was anonymous Artform employee and I was involved in very early drafts of it. And what I had wrote in the early drafts, and it stayed there for a long time, was, hey, y'all, let's shoot for the stars and imagine a worker-owned magazine, because otherwise these hierarchies are just going to keep playing out.
Oh, yeah.
And lo and behold, by the end of it, that language was eventually edited out of the final letter.
That's far out.
And it's like,
It's like they just don't think it's possible. And they're like, oh, well, let's be reasonable here, because how are we going to have a magazine that was started by just a bunch of workers just be run by workers? I mean, God, that would be completely insane.
And it's also like, you know, why have this letter if it's not if it doesn't have like a set of like it had a code of conduct, and I like that. But then it's like, well, what if someone breaks that code of conduct? We should all strike, right?
Mm-hmm.
All the 3,000 people who signed this letter should all refuse to come into work.
But if everybody strikes, then what if somebody else makes the art? They could.
Yeah, they're fucking scabs.
They could put the ads in the magazine, and I want to put the ads in the magazine. No fair. I love typeset.
It's just like, you know, you need to have a follow-up, you know? You need to have, like,
oh God!
Actual. If you're gonna have a petition and you're like, we want people to adopt this set of things, and then the thing adopts those set of standards, you hold them accountable with your labor power. That's what you do. You widely circulate a code of conduct or a wage certification or a set of practices that you are gonna ask this place to follow, and if they don't, we won't come to work until they do.
It's like being in any kind of a relationship. Like, I don't know why we need to make so many different definitions for like how to conduct oneself. It's like, okay, I'm a person, I'm in a relationship with another person, and if they start like antagonizing me, I say, I will leave if you hurt me.
Like, and you know, that's sort of what happened with Artform, is all the people who were like, this is bullshit, and had a principled stance and / didn't need to stay in the job for like immigration reasons or like more serious reasons.
Oh yeah.
Just left.
Yeah.
They just quit.
Artform is so weird right now. I got like, somehow one of the new issues was mailed to one of my roommates.
Yeah.
And I was looking through it and like, It's so bizarre, because now there's a split of like, here's the really cool, nice looking art that's just totally design based and like well executed craftsmanship stuff. And then there's these articles that are like, fucking Trump, what? Oh my God, he's still alive. Things are whack, yo. It's cool though. I'm not stressing. I'm cool. This is cool.
We get to make art.
Yeah.
Instead of like,
this is like a cool way to resist.
Yeah, it's resistance garbage.
Yeah, it was like reading. Yeah. I was trying to read the thing that it just kind of was going past my eyes. And I'm like, what are they talking about? What is going on?
Fucking neoliberal garbage.
Pages and pages of just like, hey, I know bad things are bad.
Yeah, I mean, I like what Nan Goldin's doing against the opioid companies.
Oh, Nan Goldin is my dog.
And she was in, an art. There's a big thing on her in one of the new art form.
Yeah. Stuff. Well, Nan Goldin's doing it though. You know, like she's an artist and she's hitting those big galleries and everything. But like she also takes the time to advocate for these issues of like domestic violence and yeah.
I mean, this is a clear addiction. This is a clear like advocacy that she can do.
Yeah.
And that's different than I think just being like, how can we resist Trump and Russia?
Right. It's like, what's the hot topic right now? Okay, well, I'm going to write a piece about that and like, you know, whatever.
It's not really advocating for anything. It's just being like, basically like, wouldn't it be better if the controlled opposition of the Democratic Party was back in charge?
No.
No, not really.
No. Or they're like, well, they're getting into it. They're like, oh, socialism exists.
Yeah.
Oh, that's like kind of neat.
Interesting. Yeah. I mean, anything helps, I guess, spread the word about socialism. But
it's just funny to watch people try to learn. I like watching people try.
I mean, that's what we do with this podcast.
I know. It's yeah. It's like, oh, that's cute. They're doing it too. Look at that.
Yeah. I mean, what I like about presenting this reading in audio form is like I remember being too stressed out and working all the time to dedicate to like books.
Oh my
books.
God, yeah.
So I would just listen to shit, and that's when I got into the Street Fight.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just listen to, and Street Fight was like just the best
Street
thing.
Fight is the absolute jam, is the most
it's
best
so
thing. I actually aspire to being like them.
They're so cool.
They just are always cool. And I always like learn a little life thing.
And they're humble people. Like they're like when they fuck up, they're like, oh, we fucked up. Like you know, like it's like they're and or like, you know, they're just really open minded and not like authority. They're not like authorities. They're anarchists. They're anarchists.
They're like the coolest anarchists. That like, just they're like, hey man, we're just here talking about stuff. We hate jobs. You want to talk about your job you hate?
Yeah, and I'm just like, oh shit, jobs are bad. I get it. And I've always been sort of anti-capitalist, but I don't really know what that means. And then like, I don't know. I read Ben Davis back in the day, but I didn't really understand Marxism, so I didn't understand it as much as I do right now, reading it right now.
Yeah.
It's like nothing wrong with going back to things from the past and reading them again.
Oh, totally. Definitely having that moment, too, where I realized all of the things that, like, everything is connected. Everything I've been reading is connected, and all it took was actually reading Marx to make the through line, but all through school, and then all of these images I was making was like, oh, wait, none of this makes any sense until the day when you realize you just really hate when people tell you what to do and that's capitalism. You know, man, just like over the bullies.
Okay, but I am into reaching collective consensus with my peers.
Oh, totally.
I am into listening to what people have to say, but not somebody who, you know, takes home a dollar while I take home a dime, you know? I'm not into hearing what they have to say. I'm not interested in hearing what people who are stealing from me have to say.
Oh, yeah. But realizing that's at the root of everything.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm not interested in what the cops have to say. I'm not interested in what fucking, like, bullshit liar politicians have to say.
I'm not interested in what my manager has to say.
There's something there, folks. And you're not alone. There's, you know, the history of the world is the history of class struggle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. History is made from revolutions. Oh, today, Tate has the Ask a Curator Hour on Twitter.
Oh.
Okay, so they do it regularly. I highly recommend messaging the Tate when they have their Ask a Curator thing going on with why do you whitewash communist movements out of art history?
Yes, yes, yes.
I asked them today.
Yeah.
They didn't respond.
But if we all asked them.
If we all asked them, they might say something in response. It could be interesting. I don't know. Why? Why do you rewrite history to remove communism?
Yeah. It might be something to do with their board.
Yeah. And aren't curators responsible for this history? Aren't they the ones doing it?
Yeah, I love that. Any final words?
Well, that's my final word.
That's great. Check out Ben Davis. I think I want to play out to the new They Might Be Giants song about communism. That's actually pretty good.
Word.
It's brand new. It just came out today.
Bam, 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 bam. Let's dance. I got handed an Ayn Rand sandwich straight from the can. It tasted so bland. I asked a lass to pass me a glass of Engels Conditions of the Working Class. Right away they dragged me to the committee to explain my un-American activity. They're gonna see they made a mistake if they'd only let me play my mixtape. I'm not partial to the Marshall or the plutocrats in their beaver hats and the fascists.
Yes, the car.